fellow Dharma sisters and brothers. Thank you so much for sharing your practices today. It's always really special to sit with you. Yes, so as Roshi mentioned, this is an extension or a conclusion and a carrying on of the workshop this past Ango called Sweeping Changes. And so what we did was we met on Zoom and we watched a short documentary that I made called Dust to Light, which is still available on our Discord channel. And I gave a short presentation with some resources. So the recording of that and the PDF presentation with all the, you know, talks to listen to and books recommended and everything, those are all available on the Cleaning channel on our Discord. But just so you can always feel like you're in the loop if you'd like to revisit those materials. Another component of the workshop that was optional, as it's all optional, but was being paired with a reflection partner. As an educator, building reflection into the process is important to me, and certainly with Zen practice it makes sense. So people had an opportunity to have someone that they would check in with regularly, and so many of those folks couldn't make it here today, which is why I'm doing a little bit more of a talk than a discussion, since they can't be here, but they did share a lot of their experiences with me, and even if I can't share every amazing anecdote and insight, it definitely informed what I was able to put together and share today. So, to begin, looking at the word samu, as this talk is the practice of home samu, samu means work, and in the Zen monastic or Zen practice context, it refers to the daily chores that the monks do to maintain a monastery. And when we attend session and we participate in that life, we sometimes refer to the Samu period as Niten Soji, which means daily cleaning. And how this, and actually I sent that term, I found the characters for it, I sent that to a friend of mine who speaks Japanese, and he actually didn't know how to translate it, so there might be a better translation, but that's what I was able to come up with. And so, you know, how did this Samu work practice come to be such a large part of Zen practice? Well, because it's, you know, if you haven't spent too much time at a monastery, you might not know that it's actually not uncommon for monks to spend more time cleaning and working than actually meditating. And I can say that that experience is true from my time doing Kese at DBZ. That can certainly happen. So going back to Baijiang, or Paichang, or Hyakujo, he's a Chan master from the Tang Dynasty, and he's the one who wrote down many of the rules and procedures for monks at the temple in a text that's known as the Pure Rules of Baijiang. And it included a schedule with work periods, which we know as Samu. And he's also the one famous for saying, a day without work is a day without food, when he refused to eat when his monks took away his tools to prevent him from working because he was getting older and they were worried about his health. He continued to work as long as he could. So it actually ended up being quite helpful that the Chan temples at that time were self-sufficient and worked and took care of themselves, because it helped them survive the great Buddhist persecution just a few decades after Baijiang later. And there were other lineages that were depending upon alms that were really hurt by that persecution. But it actually ended up helping Zen monasteries continue. So now that we have a little bit of that historic background on Samu, how did I come to be sitting here to give this talk? We all clean, right? So I may have shared this during the workshop, but for those who weren't there, here's a little bit of the sort of inciting incident for me, which was, so when I was a child, my parents raised me to be very studious, to care a lot about school and grades and learning. And so I took all the hardest classes I could when I had choices, and I filled myself up with lots of homework. And I would have a lot of homework to do every night. And my mother also would cook a wonderful home-cooked meal every evening. And I remember at the time I was, you know, young, but still able to appreciate that that was special, that not everyone got that. However, I still begrudged something about it, which was that my mom, when she would cook, she would make a big mess. She would take out all the utensils, all the ingredients, and not put anything away as she went. And so my brother and I would spend about an hour every night cleaning the kitchen, because we were kids, maybe we weren't that efficient. But even as we got older, it just would take for a long time. And so we were conflicted, not knowing, like, it takes us so long to clean the kitchen, yet we want to be doing our homework. And so I viewed cleaning as this chore that was in the way of what I really wanted to be doing. You know, maybe there were some other framings that were less skillful, like doing chores was to pull your weight around the house rather than to contribute to a loving home and take care of each other. There's, you know, many layers to that, but a big part of the story that I carried and that I told myself was that I didn't like doing dishes. I didn't like cleaning the kitchen. And this spilled over into, you know, college. College students are notorious for not doing dishes. Not always, but many. And I did the dishes, but I really hated it. I wasn't going to be unkind to my roommates, and, you know, I was respectful and cleaned after myself, but I just carried this weight in my heart of, like, ugh, I gotta do this now. And then a few years out of college in my early 20s, I remember, you know, listening to Thich Nhat Hanh give a talk. He speaks often of washing the dishes. And he talked about holding each dish like it's the baby Buddha, and allowing the warm water to wash over, and maybe the scent of the soap, and just being present with each individual dish. And living in New York, not having a dishwasher, I had to wash my dishes by hand, so I definitely, you know, it was an easy connection. I didn't have to, you know, sacrifice using the dishwasher. It was already happening. So there was just a very strong light bulb moment, like just a big wake up for me when I heard that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to hate this part of my daily life. I've been actively choosing to hate something I have to do every day, just hating a part of my life. And I stopped, just like kind of cold turkey, I just stopped hating it. And I realized, I learned a lot from that moment, in that I didn't have to keep believing the stories I told myself about myself. And any thought or opinion I had, I could change. I actually had the power to change that, just from washing dishes, which is why Zen practice is, I think, just so rooted in our daily lives. Because if we really listen to what the dishes, the floor, the laundry is willing to say to us, stop having ideas about it. Stop coming at it with ideas, but just be present with it. There's a lot we can learn. And yeah, that negative limiting storyline was gone. And that was sort of the first big moment. Then another moment that is, you know, a sort of an ongoing moment, not a single sort of light bulb moment, but which is when Tari and I moved in together. You know, we're partners, for those who don't know us. And we came to understand we have different ways of being tidy and organizing and maintaining a home. And so I definitely am deeply grateful for all of the changes that he's made. And I'm borrowing some words from Fushin to honor how I would like to care for our home. But it's also been a practice for me to not just, it's easy for us to get caught up in the socially accepted idea that cleanliness and tidiness and everything being perfectly put away and Instagrammable, and not that, you know, it's Instagramming our house, but like, for, you know what I mean, that idea, that that's what's acceptable. But I think there's also a lot of lessons for those of us who are attached to cleaning to let go of things being perfect and tidy all the time and needing to be a certain way. Fushin, just speaking of Fushin a moment ago, she shared a sweet comment with me about her partnership that she said while she does the majority of cleaning in their home by choice, she definitely, that was a conscious decision on their part, that she said her husband does a few things like making the bed each day, and I thought it was very sweet how she mentioned that it was very loving the way that her husband even puts the pillows the way she likes them, like that little detail of like showing love and care for each other. And so that's been another ongoing lesson with my life. So in looking at my personal experience, is just sharing that as a, hopefully you can relate on some level, is looking at my own internal tendencies to understand why I feel compelled to keep our home a certain way. That was a big question for myself. I think it's very easy for us to just say like, well, I'm just this way, or because like feel like a place has to be a certain way, because if it's not this way, I can't function, I can't do this, or to have all this rationale and reasoning, all these ideas about it. But I don't think we need to necessarily overthink and come up with reasons for everything. Because even if you can come up with something that feels kind of settled and rational, that, you know, it can become its own other limiting storyline. And then at the same time, it's important that we don't generate extra concerns about being judged and stressing out about keeping up with the Joneses, you know, like having your home a certain way. I mean, I've been talking about cleaning with many people for years now, since I made a short documentary about cleaning, and then based on feedback and whatnot, I'm researching and developing what might be a series down the line about cleaning. And so I've had lots of opportunities to ask people about, you know, how this has come up in their lives. And I remember someone telling me that their grandmother would make all of the kids, the like 6 or 7 kids in the house, so his, you know, mother and aunts and uncles, they would have to clean the house to the point where the kids were ironing the curtains like on a weekly basis. Maybe that had gotten a little twisted with time, but just that the idea that their home had to be presentable to the neighbors to the point where children were ironing curtains regularly. You know, we can certainly take it to an extreme. Now, I wasn't there, I'm not passing judgment necessarily on that moment. We don't know how that was held, but there was some intergenerational trauma that I do, the grandson has even shared. And so just being thoughtful and understanding the heart with which we do things is very important. So much of this journey, exploring the topic of cleaning, you know, whether it's looking at someone who tends to procrastinate and put off cleaning, or someone who's, you know, really neat and tidy, and that's their usual MO, is that it's really about cleaning. Cleaning is about balance, and oftentimes holding these contradictory ideas at once. And so bringing this back to Zen language, many of you have probably heard Chinyu Suzuki Roshi's quote, this is maybe not exactly word for word translated, but you're perfect just as you are, but you could use a little improvement. You know, and of course that harkens to the idea that there's this mirror and dust falling and something that we need to constantly dust, but then the tile that can't be polished to become a mirror, right? There's this contradictory nature, this balance that we need to be able to live with and see which way things are leaning. and just be open to reading that moment. And so whether it's letting go of our ideas like guilt and shame around mess, or sometimes we just need to embrace mess. For example, earlier this year, I had a really jam-packed schedule, like few weeks where it was just like nonstop, day in, day out, going to work, coming home, throwing my tools down, laundry piling up, things were getting nuts. And just things, piles were accumulating. And I know in the past, a lot of my experience of that mess would have been that this is like grinding on me, that this is evidence that I'm not keeping up, that things are falling apart, and it would feel like a problem. But I've started to notice a small shift in that there was a time when I saw all this mess and I experienced it as evidence of a life richly lived. You know, and maybe I really, like, I had plans to, like, do some much-needed laundry because, like, who was going to wear underwear the next day? Who knows? But then my friend calls and, you know, things have hit the fan and they need help. And so I end up on a three-hour-long phone call and, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. But instead of feeling bad that this mess had accumulated, I could see that I was present with the people in the way that I needed to be. I was doing the things that I needed to at that time, whether that was making the money that I needed for practical purposes, or so I could, you know, pay for session or, you know, get somewhere, right? Or it was, you know, being present with the person that needed me in that moment. You know, it's just having that perfectly tidy house, you know, might prevent you from spending time with people in the way that they need. I think parents definitely understand that, with the messes that children make. I've heard many parents, and I'm not a parent yet, but, you know, that many parents have mentioned how it's impossible to keep a house clean while there's lots of children, because there's priorities, right? And that's an obvious one, because prioritizing, like, feeding, bathing, sleeping, you know, all the things you need for a child. But anyways, it's even if it's not the pressing matters of keeping a child alive, it's just all of the other things that are important in life. So one thing that I've noticed in myself is that when tidying up for a guest, that there's like that, you know, that morning or like the night before or whatever it is, just that day of like preparing for someone to come sleep on our floor, because that's what we have to offer, is just like sometimes there's this tenseness of like, I gotta clean, you know, and going around and cleaning with that heart. And I'm like, wait, why am I cleaning? How am I cleaning? And I realize that, well, I'm cleaning to offer a space of care for a friend. And so if I can step back and go like, wait, hold up, it doesn't have to be this experience of like nervousness, because it's not like I'm worried about being judged, but it's that I'm like, it will be good enough, and maybe there's a little extra cat hair. Last night I was luckily relieved of many of these duties because Tyree took care of things, but I knew that Kago was a cat person. I was like, Kago stayed the late night last night. And I was like, oh, well, Kago will understand the cat hair. Like, but they're what Tyree took care of it. But anyways, there's lots of this internal feelings that we can have around cleaning, whether we're, while we're engaged in it, or if we're procrastinating and avoiding it. And then we can start to judge ourselves for like, oh, my room's a mess. I'm a mess. I'm a problem, right? And we add all these extra layers on top of it. And we don't need to do that. You know, I gave the example of shifting my mindset around seeing that messy pile as evidence of life richly lived, was when speaking with Asa. Asa mentions that at first, you know, Asa's a new mother, for those who haven't met Asa, and she's encountering dirty diapers. Of course, they stink and they're constantly happening, and it's an endless cycle. And she mentioned how that in the beginning there was something unpleasant about that experience, but she realized that she just wanted to like shift that, and so she decided to laugh at it. I believe I'm relating that part of the story correctly, but that she decided to shift something about it, and she was just gonna thank Sammy, thank the poops, thank the dirty diapers, you know? And so she did it, and at first she said it felt fake. You know, she's like doing it, this is ridiculous. But then eventually with time, it shifted. And like now she like legit appreciates the dirty diapers. And so I think just like in Zazen, when we begin to practice, there can be so much turbulence that sitting still can feel like fake, like not real, like what is going on? I'm not good at this meditation thing. There's so much happening. I'm sitting still, I'm not really peaceful, right? But that if we keep showing up, it doesn't have to feel like a charade. Eventually, you know, you keep turning towards that quietude. Just keep turning towards it until it becomes real and the experience arises, right? That you can't force gratitude, you can't force serenity, but you can keep pointing yourself in that direction until it becomes your path. So I'll read a small section for, at this point, from Sweeping Changes. This is the book, Sweeping Changes, that I borrowed the title from. I've actually been in touch with the author, Gary Thorpe. He's a Zen practitioner, advanced in his years, living out in the wilderness in California with no internet and no television. Although he does have a DVD player, so he can like watch a DVD. I sent him a DVD. Anyways, he's a lovely gentleman. So this is in a section called Dusting Without Raising More Dust. And it's just a short section of that. Dust figures in one of my favorite stories about a Zen monk. Having just moved into a new temple, the monk was filled with energy and dedication and surpassed all the other monks in his zeal for cleaning. During work practice, he was an absolute tornado, running throughout the rooms and hallways, sweeping and polishing and dusting everything in sight. One day, his teacher asked him, "What are you doing?" The monk beamed a large smile in the direction of his teacher and said, "I am working hard to clear away the dust of delusion and to reveal the shining face of Buddha which is beneath it." His teacher said to him, "Please don't ever forget, the dust is also the Buddha." And so, certainly while cleaning is skillful, right? We like, it's helpful to have a clear space, maybe with to minimize distractions, so that your tools, your clothes, the spaces within your home are ready to be used in the way in which they're intended, right? So you're just sort of like prepared for life. It is skillful to have a clean home. But also remembering that that dust that falls is also the Buddha. And I really appreciated that small section. Getting to session, cleaning during the Samu period of session, it can be really rife with growth edges, right? Well, I haven't witnessed this one myself. Maybe you've encountered that. There's a story about a highly educated professor who shows up to a monastery and they're very upset with being assigned to clean the toilets. They're like, surely I have something, like I can speak Japanese, I can translate things for you, like put me on translation duty, use my skills. And they were asked to clean the toilets. So certainly this offers lessons in humility and service. There was another time, actually I've seen this many times, when someone complained that they were asked to clean a bathroom that everyone knew hadn't been used since the last time it was cleaned. This was pre-session, this would be like between session, when there were less residents at the monastery. So that person had, you know, said that they felt there was surely something more productive they could be doing. Certainly maybe there's some truth in that, like some of the cleaning solution or some water or something would be like wasted in a way, because maybe it didn't need to be washed. It wasn't filthy in that way. However, the opportunity to observe such resistance to that, you know, chore that you've been given, that might have been what the soap was cleaning anyways. you know, it's really it's really productive and healthy to look at these challenges, right? And, you know, maybe consider the ego's need to feel useful, right? This idea, like, I must be productive. I got to be useful. Now, clearly, when we sit down and we do zazen, you know, it's zazen's good for nothing. We don't do it for any particular reason. Maybe we come at it looking for peace, looking for quietude, right? But ultimately, it's an aimless activity. And so that's a, you know, cleaning itself also. If you're cleaning something that's already clean, many of you who've come to session know that you've been assigned something that appears quite clean, and you know it was just cleaned yesterday. But there's also something else there in looking at, maybe there's some humility to consider when maybe you missed a spot last time. Maybe you didn't get every speck of dust. You know, or maybe there was an opportunity for that attention to detail. Maybe there's a new way of cleaning it, another spot, something else. And maybe there's also something about not waiting for something to be completely filthy until you clean it, until it's so noticeably dirty it screams at you that it needs to be cleaned. Maybe cleaning sort of preemptively, cleaning as you go, cleaning in a way that you don't have to wait until it's just like, ick. And so the same thing with our minds, right? You don't sit zazen only when things are a hot mess. You sit every day, no matter what, even on the days that you feel peaceful, on the days that feel easy, you still sit. And in the same way, you know, we can still clean things before they're a problem, before they're more difficult to clean. So the central sort of point, I think, that I've been skirting around, or I started to say briefly, was that, and this is also a common theme throughout all of the workshop participant anecdotes that I was able to source, and their insights, it boils down to the mind with which we do or don't clean, right? Observing that. And cleaning is a daily activity. Whether or not we get to sit zazen. Someone commented to me that, oh, well, I can't really treat my cleaning like meditation until I like sit regularly and I'm actually doing zazen regularly. And I was like, no way. You can totally keep treating every moment as your zazen, extending that practice off the cushion into your daily life, especially when you don't have time to sit, right? Yeah. So whether many of us put off cleaning, possibly finding it less important or separate from what we really want to be doing, or some of us clinging to cleaning as though to exert our own power over the small part of the universe we think we can control, cleaning, you know, and if cleaning is a struggle, observe where and how that resistance arises, right? That mind with which you do it or don't do it. Observing that resistance, and you know, if things must be a certain way or something else is more important to do, look for ways to let go of that. And what about for the people who have like a really healthy sense of their relationship to cleaning, right? I'm talking about people who are like maybe obsessed with cleaning and those who, you know, avoid it at all costs. You know, there's still something to deepen as viewing it as part of your practice. There's a way for that activity to be fully integrated, which is another moment that Fuxin shared with me. She gave me a lot of great insights, so like, definitely talk with her about cleaning. She said that on one of the very first sessions she went to at Zen Mountain Monastery, she was assigned to the task of weeding. And now she had already loved weeding and joyfully went to do the work at hand. Yet she noticed that the energy of session allowed her to connect more deeply with this task. She described it as feeling like this thing she loved was newly connected up somehow, that the way turned into just this task. only one thing. And now something that she already loved and had a healthy relationship to, she experienced as sacred, the act of weeding as sacred. And she also described it as being as if in a new realm. Indeed, session is conducive for these sorts of experiences. And, you know, at the same time, how can we bring this refreshed mindset to our daily lives? Can we use each Ango period to treat our home as the zendo, the temple? And can we wash the already seemingly clean floors with no thoughts about it? And, you know, there's no need to have any thoughts about cleaning as you do it or messes as they accumulate. Sure, I gave you some examples of helpful perspective shifts. Yet, how can we approach household chores like our session samu? How does the zazen translate from the cushion to the laundry? By simply being wholeheartedly present with that task is what I'm proposing. Just fold the clothes. Just scrub the dish. Just answer the phone from the distraught friend while the floor remains covered in cat fur. Don't add anything. I'll read one more section from Sweeping Changes. So this is in the section, the ins and outs of pots and pans. And he talks about similar story to me as when he was a kid. He thought dishwashing was a punishment, something that only, you know, poor people like him had to do. He imagined rich kids just throwing out their dishes and getting new ones every morning. But he shares that gradually, though, I changed my view. While still not enthusiastic, I began to accept the fact that doing the dishes was necessary. And in recent years, I have come to enjoy this soothing and beneficial activity. There is nothing simpler, more straightforward, or more satisfying than to be totally involved in the act of taking care of something else. Whether you are caring for another person, a coffee pot, or the manuscript of a piano sonata, you can learn to use your whole heart. When you hold something back, when you harbor some small shade of resentment, your attitude will betray you. You will catch yourself on your own hooks. Any effort you make will feel as though it has only been half done, and there will be no joy in it. And in this way, your energy and spirit will both suffer. There are not many things in the world that are less mysterious than Zen practice. When you're washing the breakfast dishes, there is no need for you to think of Zen at all. Just stick your hands in the water. You don't have to study the mysterious intermingling of air and water, or the relative value of energy transformation, or the emptiness of the cups and saucers, or the miraculously surprising adhesive qualities of marmalade. The simplicity of the situation is captured in the following saying. The Zen master asked his student, "Have you had your rice?" "Yes." "Then wash your bowls." So, I don't have my reading. I still have time, good. I'd like to share a bit of the floor, though, because this was originally intended to be a discussion. And so I'd like to ask, I have a few prompts, but I guess I'd like to ask, let's see which one. I guess maybe just most open-endedly, how has cleaning or mess played a role in your Zen practice? Give you all a moment. Yeah, go for it.
I know, I'm thinking about this. I had something and then, yeah. I think I had a very punishing relationship with cleaning when I was growing up. And I always thought it was like gross, it's disgusting, why would I do this, right? And thank you for that first passage you read from Sweeping Changes. That almost made me cry, it was really beautiful. And there was a similar, there was something that I think Shingen Roshi had said once in one of her talks that really stuck with me. I think it was during one of the MLK sets that I was, you know, one of the talks that she gave. And she was, it was really a story that she had heard a person picking up garbage or leaving it at the side of the road. So the first person leaves the garbage at the side, I'm not touching that. That's disgusting, right? And the second person walks by and kind of, you know, picks up this garbage. And I think, this is gross, you know, but still picks it up and puts it in the garbage. And the third person picks up the garbage like it's a precious person or one of their pets or something precious to them, picks it up reverently and places it gently in the garbage. And like that, and that, it reminded me of the passage. And just that moment when you can relate to something that way, I was able to then, you know, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe this is my relationship with the world. So I think now that I have those stories and experiences, and I've actually experienced that myself, I feel like I can have more reverence for cleaning is like a reverence for something. And not cleaning can be a reverence too. Like you were saying, if you revere your friendship and you have gratitude for the friendship where the person means you, then you're not necessarily neglecting the floor. You're just listening. So it's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Okay, pass it.
One of the things that we talked about a lot during my first year seeing her and getting to know her was I used to always say, I hate mess. I hate mess. I hate messy people. And a lot of that was coming from just being in, you know, I hang out with other young people like myself, and we live in a gentrified neighborhood all within a couple blocks of each other. And we're young, a lot of us have trauma, a lot of us are just like gay and horny, so there's a lot of mess, basically. And there's a lot of people getting involved with each other and hurting other people or acting without regard to other people's relationships or partners. And I've generally been someone who kind of, especially lately, just kind of folds my hands and tries to stay out of the mess. But I would show up to therapy every week and be like, you will not believe, you know, what so-and-so is doing this week. I hate mess. And, you know, over the years of working through some of this stuff, something that I've just said over and over again is I'm so frustrated that that my friends or the people around me just don't understand that what they're doing is affecting other people this way, or it's so messy, or it's irresponsible. And at a certain point, I was just like, they should know better. And my therapist was like, is that fair? You know, is it fair to look at other people and just say you should know better? Is that a fair way to hold people that you spend time with or that you care about? So, and honestly, my first reaction to that is, yeah, I don't think it's fair, and I still really want to hold that judgment. So, just something you said at the end, and Kai, about just like being, what a gift it is to be able to hold things with care, and just thinking about how things are messy also deserves to be held with care. And also that's the most fair way that I can treat anything that comes my way, you know? You deserve care too, basically. Thank you.
We might have time for maybe two more. I guess Connie, since it's next to you, and I saw Lucan. Lucan, sorry.
Okay, hi, I'm Connie. So I was thinking that when I took the workshop that I was going to like get more discipline about being cleaner. Like that I was having the thought it would be like, a clean environment would mean like a clean mind. But instead, it actually gave me a lot of acceptance. And because my life got very busy, and you know, I have a housemate that isn't as clean. But instead of having resentments, although there have been times of resentments, I try to, you know, clean out of joy when I'm inspired. And this has been an evolution, because in the beginning of when I was raised, when I was young, I never cleaned at all. Then I cleaned out of like, almost like guilt, because my roommate would be like, I'm cleaning and you're not. So like every time I saw her pick up the broom or something, I'm like, okay, so it's like, I gotta start cleaning with you. So it was like guilt, but also kind of community. And then later on, my mom was telling me that, you know, she did all this work. She said it's like the labor of love. And she said, you know, she doesn't mind it. This is like just the way things are. And so then, but there was, so there, it's evolved. There were times I'd have resentments against people and I'd be like, oh, you know, like they're not picking up after themselves. But I learned to really let go of it and try to see the skills they do have. So where I am now is that, like, I've loosened my standards a lot. Like, I'm okay to have a sink full of dishes. I don't have to wipe my counter all the time, and I'm okay with it. And when I'm inspired, I clean, and if my housemate decides to clean, great, and if he doesn't, it's okay. And that's, like, so far, it's been working okay, and it could also just be the luck of the draw that, you know, as he sees me doing things, he also does things as well. So it's still not that, like, a perfect even split, but the point is that I am doing things when I'm inspired. Like, I'll put on the music and just kind of relax. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
I think we'll squeeze both in, and then I think
here we go.
Hello, I'm Dina. So cleaning for me is interesting. It comes and goes. There are times where I'm like, this is the worst thing that God ever made me do, and then there are times where I'm like, yes. I think cleaning for me gives me a foundation to work on details, and I like the results of things that are clean. So I like walking in clean spaces. I like to feel air. I feel like when things are not clean and there is a lot of chaos, I can't breathe. There's no air. There's stifling. There's blocking. There's all these things that make me nutty and bring out parts of me that I would prefer not to come out on a regular basis. So I like that. But in this conversation, what occurs to me is during COVID, which was absolutely traumatic, the one thing that I was happy about was that people were cleaning. You know, and I was like, oh my God, I'm twisted. How am I taking joy in this? But I was like, yes, I go on the subway. I hate subways. I like cleaning. So I was like, I'm going on the subway because it's clean. And it's like, I'm twisted. I need help. But I was so happy. So, you know, even now, I look around and I'm like, clean, yes. So, you know, will I examine that? No. But it's there, and you know, but I like the detail and I like the connection to a process that gives me a result that I like. Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess in regards to how this is an arena for our practice is a lot of focus on no trace, but not as in like getting every single speck of dust, but how, what are we bringing to it? And it was brought up a couple times in your talk, and I'm sure everybody seems to either be alluding to it or has said it explicitly, of our relationship with cleaning starts pretty much at the beginning in childhood, and our experiences with our parents in regards to either chores given or even how they engage with it. And I think I became tuned in very early on in my life to how much cleaning and chores can be just such an ample, like a ripe breeding ground for resentment and keeping score of who does what and you're not doing it adequately enough or whatever, and a lot of policing that kind of came up. And I feel that at times, but I have really allowed my practice to bleed into those areas as though they were ever defined in any clear way of Zazen is Zazen, cleaning is cleaning. I think the whole point of this is that six in one hand, half a dozen in the other kind of thing, if I'm not using that correctly. But of just the ways that you let in that kind of lightness that you experience when you turn towards those things during Zazen into your cleaning, it changes the way your relationship to it. I know for myself, when I first started keeping my own space, when I moved out of, you know, college, really just, I don't even really count as a real experience, but when I moved in, it was very important to me that when I closed the door and entered my house and my space, that it signaled to me that my forward-facing social self was done for the day, and I could clock out of my job, and I'd take the armor off, and it wasn't about clocking in and then clocking back into another thing. And so cleanliness became that sort of thing. My roommate, who I care very deeply for, was on the opposite ends of the spectrum, where mess became kind of a physical manifestation of a lot of her mental health issues and what have you, so I took on the bulk of the cleaning. I initially said to myself, I'm doing this as an act of care, but then even then, I think we need to be mindful of not adding a certain degree of righteousness to the cleaning. It is an act of care in the sense of, I see that you are not in a place that you can be adequately, you know, evenly distributing the chores or what have you, but I'm not doing this out of a place of pity, because I also benefit from it, because I like a clean house and that's what I would like to live in. But I think if anything, it's about what Thich Nhat Hanh said, and that is, it's not about finding joy in cleaning the plates. It's not about finding anything. It's just about cleaning the plate. And sometimes joy comes up. Sometimes resentment comes up of like, I can't believe you just left this pile in here with like God knows what crusted on it, so I'm gonna have to scrub it and it's gonna be in a whole process or whatever, and I can motor on about that. But it's I think it's really if we learn anything from our daily lives, if we learn anything from our experience at Sachin especially, as you mentioned, like, this bathroom is clean as far as I can tell. Why am I cleaning it again today? Sometimes that's just what you've got to do day in and day out, and don't analyze it anything more beyond that. And I think that that's hugely important to our practice. And I think it really got drilled home this past session for me, being more in the Tenzo than in the Dharma hall, of just these things are a lot more permeable than I think we realize. To be mindful of that and honor that, but don't add any specks of dust. Last thing I'll say, just mostly for clarification, I remember Roshi giving a number of talks about the idea of a mirror in Zen and what it represents, and how often we try to dust the mirror and we get off all the dirt on it, and we probably shouldn't be doing that. But thank you very much.
Thank you all for inadvertently participating in my documentary research.
I know we're out of time, so maybe you should tell them, because they have a hand
up. Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay? Okay. I can't see who on Zoom.
Okay.
There's a little hand raised.
Jorge.
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 There we go, we see. We don't hear you yet because you.
Is it the thing or not?
Is our speaker?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's your muted.
Can anyone else on Zoom hear Jorge? Yes? Okay, so it's on our end. Do you want to teach him? 1 second. Try now.
Hello.
There we go. There we go.
Okay. So I will make this as quick as possible. I didn't expect it to take hold on, but this is my first time attending, and I don't know as much of the proper like titles and things like that, but. Reverend Ricardo Paterni is my father-in-law, and Vincent, obviously my brother-in-law, he invited me to join today, and I'm in Colorado, and so I'm joining, I'm getting married to Valentina Paterni, Ricardo Paterni's daughter, and I've always been someone who is fairly messy and someone who will always wait till the last second to clean. And I think a lot of what I heard today really resonated with me, especially the idea of cleaning being something that can be a source of, the attitude you have towards cleaning can be from generational trauma. But anyway, I wanted to share my experience with cleaning and what I'm really focusing on, and I've learned about myself in the past couple of years, especially getting married to someone who is a little more neurotic about cleaning than anyone else could generally be, and me being on the complete opposite spectrum, I learned necessarily what cleaning is about, in a sense. I always thought cleaning was something that you did to make other people happy. You know, I cleaned so that my mom would have less to clean, and I cleaned so that my dad would, well, I guess he never really took part in any of the cleaning, but it was more so that my siblings, you know, would have less to clean as well. And so I got my own resentment, and I had my own experience with resenting the fact that my ex-long-term partner in college during COVID would not clean, and so that was another source of resentment for me. But then, in the experience that I've had, getting married to my fiance, like, she's very neurotic about cleaning, and I also would clean to make her happier, but it was different for me because this was someone I loved and cherished, and being able to clean for them was something that made it easier for me to do. And in the past few months, I've been coming to terms with the fact that I've been living with undiagnosed ADHD, and having finally the medication for it, cleaning became a lot easier for me. And so being able to learn that the attitude I have towards cleaning is not necessarily something that is reflecting on me as a person or me as the personality that I have or anything like that, but the fact that I can now, looking forward, look at cleaning as something, again, that I do for other people that shows that I appreciate and love them, but I mean, I can even just be a little more fundamental about it and say that, well, I'm going to do cleaning from now on because I love myself, you know, and because it's something that I can do the quote that I really resonated with was like, the dust is also the Buddha, and to me that kind of means that I am part of the dust, and dust is something that I can clean to help clean myself, I guess. I don't know anything about Buddhism, but it's something that really just came at me while listening today. And I appreciate everyone waiting an extra 7 minutes for me to share that.
Thank you, Jorge.
Thank you, Jorge. Hey, that's brave chiming in when you haven't participated in one of these before, so thank you. Thanks for seeing that. Sorry, I guess I need glasses now. So certainly this is endless. We all have countless interactions and experiences with cleanliness, mess, and this daily part of our life. But just, I think, a capping end to this would be just remember that we don't have to add anything onto it. We don't have to tell ourselves stories. We don't have to have preferences about it, cleaning or not cleaning, mess and tidiness. We can just be present with it. Thank you.